Good morning, everyone, and welcome, and well done for getting here this morning. Welcome to Essex Church, home of this gathered community known as Kensington Unitarians. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Jane Blackhall. I'm a member of this congregation and I work here as the outreach officer. Our minister, Sarah Tinker, is having a well-earned day off, so this morning's service will be led by a number of members of the congregation, so there'll be some coming and going from the lectern today. Our opening words this morning are from Erica Hewitt. As we enter into worship, put away the pressures of the world that ask us to perform, to take up masks, to put on brave fronts. Silence the voices that ask you to be perfect. This is a community of compassion and welcoming. You do not have to do anything to earn the love contained within these walls. You do not have to be braver, smarter, stronger, better than you are in this moment to belong here with us. You only have to bring the gift of your body, no matter how able, your seeking mind, no matter how busy, your animal heart, no matter how broken. Bring all that you are and all that you love to this hour together. Let's start by lighting our chalice, the symbol of our worldwide Unitarian and Unitarian Universalist community. We light this chalice for all who are here and all who are not. For all who have ever walked through our doors. For those who may yet find this spiritual home. And for those we can't even yet imagine. For each of us and for us all. May this flame burn warm and bright.
I knew a man once who came to church every Sunday. You may find nothing remarkable in this, but think of it, a man who came to church every single Sunday, and it was not that he lacked other things to do. I knew him only in the last years of his life, a birthright Unitarian, a retired geologist, who when he was not at church was a volunteer for Amnesty International, for the local food bank, for the American Civil Liberties Union, for the Family Planning Clinic, the AIDS Project, for the Unitarian Universalist District we were part of, I don't know how to pronounce this next word, for the Audubon Society, is that bird watching? And for a splendid community chorus. Busier than any of us, still holding full-time jobs, he was committed, effective, clear about what he could and would, and by his own standards, should contribute to the causes he cared for, the world and people he cared for. But what set him apart from all of us was that he came every single Sunday. And because of hearing loss, I think, more than any sense of his own importance, he sat in the front row. Why do you come, John, in all kinds of weather, when you're well and when you're not, when you like the guest speaker and when you know you won't? Why do you come every Sunday? I asked him not long before he died. His answer was straightforward, just like the man himself. I come, he said, because somebody might miss me if I didn't. He said it in a way not arrogant at all, but generously and honestly. He was the kind of person who saw it as his duty and his privilege to welcome newcomers on Sunday morning. Not because he needed more friends himself, the man was 80 years old with a lifetime of friends and colleagues and acquaintances to spare. He had plenty of friends already, more than he could handle. He did it not because he wanted to evangelize the visitors or grow the church. On the contrary, he loved and missed the tiny congregation he joined in 1955. He felt a little lost with so many new faces, a little sad at all the changes. He greeted people as they came and steered them towards the minister or the coffee pot, the Sunday school, the guest book, the pledge cards, the sign-up sheets, because he felt it was the right and only thing to do. When people come into your home, you welcome them as if nothing at that moment matters more. He worked hard on Sunday mornings. He got up on Sundays expecting to work hard, to make others feel at home. He came with that in mind, and he was right. After he died, we missed him when he didn't come. And do you know what happened? The Sunday after his memorial, Someone new, who'd never met John and now would never have the chance, walked right in and sat down in his empty place in that front row. A whole family just sat right down as if they owned the place, as if they had every right to be there, as if we were glad to see them. Two women new to town, and their toddler and their baby. They came hoping there was room, and John would have been delighted.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Jo, and this is my piece, and it's about hospitality at home. I live in a house in central London that's big enough to easily accommodate more than just me, so I like to have visitors. Because of where I live, a 15-minute walk from Big Ben, my house is attractive for visitors. I have visitors who stay with me as guests, some have even paid me too. And others, if I know them well, and experience has taught me to be wary, who stay while I'm away. I love being able to offer that to people. I have a family who are scattered across the UK and the USA, so I travel a lot. This means I'm also a regular visitor. So, if that saying, guests, like fish, go off after 3 days, holds any truth, and I think it does, I have my share of being a fish and of being the container of fish. I came to London from Rye, a very small town, population 4,000, near the coast of East Sussex, bordering on Kent, in 1970. By the time I came here, I was desperate to leave home, to leave the small town mentality that persisted in the 1960s and 70s, and probably still does, though hopefully, because my grandchildren live there now, to a lesser extent. No people of colour lived there, and homosexuality, though acknowledged in whispered corners, was still illegal until July 1967. The world was a small place. Why am I telling you this? Because although I grew up in Rye, which at best could be described as safe and containing, and at worst suffocating, I also knew there was a world outside of Rye, and I was determined to see some of it. I was keen to explore a bit. Rye, at that time, prior to the building of the M2 and the M20, was en route from London to the ports at Dover and Folkestone. So I used to watch the hitchhikers on the A259, waiting for their next ride to take them to the continent. I watched longingly, sure, determined actually, that that would soon be me. And it was, in 1971 and then again in 1972. Hitchhiking in the 1970s for the young was a bit like travelling is now in the 2000s. I was with my boyfriend, which has its pros and cons for getting lifts, and we travelled across France, over the top of Italy, into Yugoslavia, as it was then, and down to Bulgaria, where we turned back and went up through Austria to Berlin, then on through Luxembourg and home. This was before the wall came down, so travelling across East Germany was a bit hairy. This is my first tale of hospitality, although, albeit not exactly in the home, though I think the boundaries of what home means could be extended here, since everywhere was our home at that time. In fact, I put the whole concept of hitchhiking into the hospitality box. A taxi driver picked us up at the border of Austria and East Germany. And although delighted to get a lift so quickly, we were worried all the way, several hours, that when we arrived in Berlin, he might present us with a huge bill, since our German and his English were virtually non-existent. But he didn't. He smiled and waved us on our way. What hospitality. This is just one tale. There are many more, some a little less hospitable, like camping in Siena when we were set upon by thugs, maybe thugs is a bit strong, who poured water over our tent and camping in France where we were robbed at night. As well as the hitchhiking of my carefree days, I've travelled a lot and stayed with friends and friends of friends, and always aimed to be a good guest, a good fish who rinses off any potential smells every day. Ew. What is it that causes the smells, though? As a host, I always aim to provide the basics: bed, towels, bus maps, details of cheap deals and travel, wireless internet, and a hot water bottle in the winter. And I tell my visitors some of my idiosyncrasies, the ones that will or might upset us both, bearing in mind not to scare them with too many rules or make myself sound insane. For example, I need to sleep. If I don't get enough sleep, I simply don't function well. So it's high on my list of daily essentials. I also sleep very lightly. Go to bed at 10:30, sleep at 11, and wake around 7. So I'm not the best bet as a host for the young, for party people, for night birds, or for those with heavy feet. I've discovered that it's better to spell it out while we're in the planning stage rather than trust to luck. This works for me as a visitor too, though of course I tread more carefully, not wanting to sound like a control freak. My ideal guest is the one who just wants a bed and a chat on the way in or out, plus a meal or two together, preferably out somewhere, because I'm not too keen on cooking. The potential for smells, in my book, is the guest who wants me to entertain and accompany them for the whole of the day. Or for the whole of their stay. Not just the day. Day's okay. Equally, and ideally, I like to be able to do that as a guest. When I'm visiting, I usually have an agenda and assume my visitors do too. It's not easy to find that balance, of course, but it does help with the fishy smell factor when I'm clear and as honest as possible about sharing my space. Anyone want to risk it? My spare rooms are cosy, the welcome is warm, and the view is nice. Just remember to leave the trumpet and the clogs at home.
Greetings. For people who don't know me, my name is Jim Blair. And I noticed on the hymn sheet, it's "Everybody Deserves a Welcome." And I thought, what do I do in 5 minutes? So what I've decided is that I'm going to look at an experience yesterday, look at the pressure I felt under because I had to be a host, then look at some of the drivers that affect that, then drop into some of my experience as a police officer, where sometimes I was forced to be host as a custody officer in a police station. So yesterday, with the Jubilee, we were invited to a little party, and at the last minute, we suddenly realised we had to go. And I suddenly felt under pressure. What do I take? Do I take wine, food? And my daughter gave me a hat so I could dress up and play the fool, because I thought, I can contribute. I can play the fool quite well sometimes. And so I thought, but why am I feeling under pressure? Is that as I walk into someone's event? And then as we left, my daughter said, this isn't right really, because we have new neighbours and no one invited them to this event. So should we invite them to one at our house? I went, when? She said, now. I thought, And we had friends on the other side who I'd been saying we should get to know better for a while. So we invited both of them to our house in an hour and a half's time. And then we went home and told Caroline, who was delighted. So we rushed about cleaning and preparing and rushing out to get things. And I thought, why do I do this? Why do I feel under so much pressure to be a host? And why? It's supposed to be a time of fun and I feel quite stressed out. And this is a pattern, I think, for me, that I feel under pressure when people come to me to be a good host. And I wonder sometimes what drives that. And several times I thought, my parents, me, Father Scott, my mum's Irish ancestry, Celtic tradition of care, being good host, protect and look after people. And it's such an unconscious, powerful driver sometimes. So I can easily get frustrated, because yesterday I was going to Jenny, but we haven't got enough beer. She says, but we've got lots of wine and lemonade. I'm going, but not enough beer. And I thought, how do I get in this place? So given the fact I was going to have a few minutes today, I went back and I thought, oh, just a little bit of research. And it was interesting for me that hospitality comes from hospice, the Latin word, which originally meant to have power over. And how does that move into our modern interpretation? And in the West today, mainly it's about etiquette, hosting, guests, and it's about how we care for people and look after people. And I've noticed in some of my travels, I was very fortunate to do a bit of travelling to Pakistan and to India, and the level of hospitality is just mind-blowing. You know, a culture that prizes, it's almost as if you're a god who's entered someone's house. And actually, historically, and through mythology, the belief would be actually in some cultures that you're a god that's entered the house. And I know that even with some forms of sort of Christian tradition, that the suggestion that you could be Jesus who is visiting. So this idea that we need to care for someone, and so it can be linked to quite a strong spiritual aspect. The Greeks, I suppose, a lot of our modern ways of saying things comes from the Greeks. And the Greeks believed hospitality was a divine right. So people would turn up, and you wouldn't even ask who they were and where they were from until you'd got them into the house, you'd fed them and looked after them, and then you'd go, hold on a minute. You're not one of these families we have an ancient grudge with, are you? So in Homer's Odyssey, really is about how people are treated and dealt with and cared for as they travel. So this sort of Greek-Roman sort of influence and Celtic influence, I think, has been a major influence on how we do stuff, sometimes without even thinking. Yeah. And sometimes I think, how did I get into that? I'm not sure I really like the person, but I invited them into my home, or I've done whatever. And I thought, what drove me to that? And sometimes, of course, it's much easier to invite people who you like and you get on with. And sometimes it's much easier to be hospitable to people that are similar to you and you have some sort of relationship with. And some people are sometimes more difficult. One of my roles as a police officer for 30 years was to work as the custody officer in a police station. And sometimes some people didn't really want to be in there. and they would come in sometimes. I remember one occasion I was sitting there, and there was the only one sitting in the room, and they sort of threw in this Irish traveller, no shirt on. He'd obviously just had a really good fight. And I can't remember the exact words, but they weren't very friendly as he came through the door. But he did call me English. What was interesting, I thought, how do I relate to the person? So I stood up and said, don't call me English. My father's Scottish and my mother's Irish. Sit down. He went, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. And said, but I did take the effort to try and have some sort of rapport. I also wanted to keep my head on my shoulders, since I was the only one in the custody suite. So there's a bit of a selfish motivation. But sometimes it is difficult. On one occasion, there was a huge fight. Two police officers were beaten, but not that badly hurt, but I didn't know that. And it brought this young guy in, who was just really difficult. And he sat opposite me. The first thing he did is he tore up his custody record, which didn't please me very much. And so I sat there looking at him, and I said, what's your name? And he says, Jesus. And I says, what's that? Jesus. I thought, and I looked and I thought, that's it. Right. And someone said, no, it is his name. It is his name, Spanish. And I went, right. And then spending some time to relax and think, I have some responsibility here within my professional role, but also to some level, he is a guest. He's a guest. And I would make it quite clear to my colleagues that he is in my custody suite and I have certain responsibilities, but I have certain standards of how I deal with people. And I would expect everyone to honour theirs when someone... So even someone who was a prisoner coming into the custody suite still bound into this sort of process. Yeah. Yeah, so... And so over a time I thought, well... How do I get in that place? And how do I decide how to treat people? And I suppose fundamentally, I've always thought that people fundamentally deserve to be treated with dignity and respect. And that a person's behaviour in the moment is not the person. It's not the whole person, it's something they have done. And I actually don't know what's put them in that position. So who am I to judge? I've always thought, especially with Ayanna, my youngest, who's been a like activist, still writes stuff, at one day she's going to get arrested. If she got arrested and they took her into a security seat, what sort of hospitality would I hope and expect for her from police officers and custody staff? So part of me's always thought that if someone I loved or cared for, a family member, came into a police custody area, what would I hope for them? And how could I deliver less? So as I've tried to rationalise and explain, and generally treating people respectfully worked quite well. I remember a meeting, that a guy had been arrested for drink drive. He was the drummer from a music group. And he'd been quite entertaining and funny on the evening, but irritating. But I had treated him very, very well. And I remember some weeks later walking along Ealing Broadway and this guy comes up to me. I was with Caroline and I saw him coming towards me. I thought, grabs my hand, hello Jim, how you doing? And you know, have this sort of exchange. And Caroline says, who was that? I said, oh, someone who had been arrested out in the custody street like 3 weeks ago. So my sense is there is some sort of reciprocity from a process where you treat people respectfully with care. So it's a little bit of a challenge really. I would like to just I know we all deal with guests sympathetically and carefully, but I wonder sometimes how you respect and care for yourself. What hospitality do you show to yourself in a process? And when guests come into your space, how do you deal with them? So I'd just like to end with a very short reading by Rumi called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honourably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from the beyond.
I'm Juliet. I've been with this congregation a long time.
Hospitality, rites of passage and food. This title came to mind when I spent last weekend at a particularly delightful wedding in Herefordshire. The groom is the son of my friend Jenny, and it was his choice to be married in the village, where the family have a farm, and at the 700-year-old church that the family have many connections with. The reception was held at a stately home with extensive grounds. There was dancing to a live band in the evening, and a buffet. The next day there was a barbecue for the guests who had stayed overnight after the dancing and had to return to their places of work later that day. When I'd asked Jenny what I could provide, she asked for a pudding. I made a rather wonderful chocolate brownie, topped with cheesecake, and finished it off with a topping of raspberries, icing sugar and whipped cream. There was a whole variety of other desserts too. Of course, last weekend the weather was warm, and there were blue skies, and really things could not have been more lovely. Surrounded as we were by green farmland, where sheep were grazing and the hedgerows were every bit as beautiful as those pictured by Hockney, with cow parsley, campion and buttercups. In the evening, when only close friends and the immediate family were left, there was another meal outside, where we sat at a long table and there were cold meats, cheeses, salads and leftover puddings for afters. I love foods that are linked to the Christian culture that I was brought up with. Pancakes on Shrove Tuesday, hot cross buns on Good Friday, eggs at Easter, and I know that I'm getting my mind into the spirit of Christmas when I start to bake my Christmas cakes, one for my family and one for my next-door neighbours. For many years, we've had a vegetarian Christmas dinner, no turkey for us, so the cake has become particularly symbolic. In other religions, there are all kinds of traditions to follow. The Jewish Seder meal every Sabbath when the family gathers together. In Islam, the special foods during Ramadan, after breaking the day's fast. In Sikhism, there is the hospitality of providing food every day at the Gurdwara. My son Phil and I have been several times to the big new Gurdwara on Havelock Road in Southall. I know there are people who don't go much on large celebrations and will perhaps get married with two witnesses taken from the street. And there are people who don't like to celebrate their birthdays or perhaps regard it as something only for themselves or they feel too disheartened to celebrate. In this church, we've shared many rites of passage, from naming to special birthdays and a retirement party. There have also been funeral services and memorial services at which we've celebrated the lives of members of our congregation, people we have loved and valued. We've had celebrations with delicious food and champagne, which have become the kind of party that the person celebrated would love to have been at. Lest you should think that all hospitality has to be extravagant, I should point out that we have tea, coffee and biscuits every week after the service, and that's a valuable time that helps us to pass from worship back to the everyday world. Today, I have provided some cakes in red, white and blue cases to acknowledge the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. There are biscuits, as usual, for the Republicans.
And now we take our leave. Before we gather here again, may each of us bring happiness into another's life. May we each be surprised by the gifts that surround us. May each of us be enlivened by constant curiosity. And may we remain together in spirit until the hour we meet again.